Welcome to Coffee Tea Technology, the podcast from K-Business.com. My name is Stefan Lasnik, and I would like to welcome you to the special episode of our podcast. Today, we are exceptionally not in Vienna, but in Alpbach, surrounded by the wonderful mountains of Tyrol. We are having a cup of coffee or a tea, and our topic today is digital strategy and cybersecurity, and I'm very happy about my two guests today. I would like to begin with you, Öky. You are Professor of Digital Strategy and Cybersecurity at the National Institute for Management Development, IMD, in Lausanne, Switzerland. You are named on the Thinkers 50 Radar 2022 list of upcoming global thought leaders. Congratulations. And you help businesses to tackle cybersecurity, data privacy, and digital ethic challenges. You also enable CEOs and other executives to understand these issues. A very warm welcome to you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
If you have listened to other episodes of our podcast, you might know my second guest. It's Jochen Borenich, member of the board at CANCOM. And if you wonder why Jochen is now working for CANCOM, CANCOM and K-Business.com have joined their forces to become a leading IT technology player in the DACH region, with more than 5,000 employees and a turnover of more than 1.5 billion euros. If you are interested in more details to this merger, please listen to our podcast episode number 3. I'm very happy to have you here, Jochen.
Hello, hi.
Öky, I would like to start this episode with a question for you. On the homepage of IMD, you say that cybersecurity, data privacy, and responsible innovation are two important topics to be left to technical specialists only. What does these topics make so important now and in the future?
I think there are a couple of reasons why we are almost in this perfect storm that makes these topics so important. We've been talking about digital transformation for quite a while now. Even the topic of data analytics has been on our tables for quite a long. Even the job of a data scientist in Harvard Business Review was dubbed as the sexiest job of the century, right? So these topics, we've been talking about this for quite a while, yet without really paying attention to the risk implications of these topics. And when I say risk, it can be about data protection regulations, it can be about AI ethics, analytics, data ethics, or it can be about cybersecurity. So there are many facets of risk implications of these things. And when we see that, when we leave them to only technical specialists who may not have that mindset or that responsibility, they are often left behind or end up being afterthoughts. That's what I mean when I say that these things should progress hand in hand with digital innovation and digital transformation.
So it's not only about technology, it's about culture also.
Absolutely.
About society. Jochen, would you agree?
Totally. I mean, if you see that digitization is the main enabler or sometimes even the main driver for transition, let's talk about twin transition, we'll talk about the energy and the climate transition, then you need also digital solutions for this. So we have to do this in a responsible way. In a responsible way in the sense of we do it for good, to improve our energy situation, to improve the health sector, to cope with the labor shortage, but also from the technological point of view, to do it in a responsible way, meaning to do it in a secure way, to start thinking about cybersecurity from the first day on. So it goes hand in hand. Yeah.
Also, when you said culture, right, when we look at the failure reasons, we almost always see that the reason more often than not is not because of technology, it's because of the user behavior that often causes the issue. So like you said, it's not just technology, but how we embed the technology in the organization.
The digital transformation, as you mentioned, brings a lot of improvements to our society and then to our life, but also creates hazards. You said it. In another podcast, I will put the link in the show notes of this episode. You mentioned that AI and cryptocurrencies are two trends which will bring a lot of improvement, but also a lot of new security challenges. And a big one of these new risks is to be affected by a cyber attack. In the mentioned podcast, you stated you are not hacked because you were targeted. You are targeted because you can be hacked. I found that very, very interesting. So do you think that that threat is underestimated by many companies?
You know, I often think if this underestimated is the right word or not. I'm not sure if anyone underestimates. I think, well, let's say at least since the pandemic, I think everybody is well aware of the risk itself. But there's this false sense of security, like this is not going to happen to me. I think we all have.
It happens to other people.
It always happens to other people. The closer it hits to your competitor, to someone you know, then the more real it gets, I guess. So there's this notion of, again, like you said, it always happens to someone else. So even though you understand the importance, you kind of postpone working on this because we still tend to associate cybersecurity as a cost center in organizations. So that's why it's always delayed. Always something else becomes the priority compared to cybersecurity. So is that underestimating? I really am not sure. But we clearly see that indeed it's not just about being a target, but it's also being the victim to an opportunistic attack is also a very high probability these days.
So in the podcast, you said that they don't choose only companies which they want to attack. They use AI to identify companies which are not protected enough. That's what the saying meant.
Surely there are criminal or let's say threat actors who target. They do their homework. They go after very specific executives or organizations. Sure, that is always the case. But we do see that most of the major threat actors do scan the web for active vulnerabilities. So they have software applications that they find websites with, let's say, a vulnerable version of, I don't know, Java, or a vulnerable firewall that they still have not patched the vulnerability, right? So they find these gap holes, and regardless of who you are, you will be targeted if you still have not upgraded or patched these vulnerabilities.
Perhaps a comment on this. If you look a little bit on the attack surface, in general, it's increasing dramatically. Just think about every product is more or less connected, yeah. Nowadays, if we go back and look at the space shuttle, for instance, the space shuttle had 400,000 lines of code. And if you look now in a car, an average car has more than 100 million lines of code. So every product which gets connected and gets digital increases the attack surface. So the vulnerability is increasing dramatically on a company level, on a society level, on a product level, so in every aspect. And we see it's an industry. I mean, it's not some nerds who are playing a little bit around. It's really an industry. The damage that occurs due to cyber attacks will be this year 2 times the GDP of Germany. Just to give an impression, the cybersecurity crime industry is already larger than the international drug industry. So they're really professionals using this increasing attack surface due to digitization. And therefore, we said before, we have to start to think about this topic from the first day on, when you start to think about digitization, making smart products, using new tools in your companies, when you're connecting to other companies in the supply chain, you have to see it really from an end-to-end perspective.
Absolutely. And I often realize when I talk about these topics at IMD to executives, I often realize that they still have this image of a hacker with a black hoodie, you know, hacking away in a basement, which is not necessarily the case anymore. Like Johan said, we have a huge cybercrime as a service business model attracting more and more criminals, regardless of their affinity with technology, regardless of their skill set in programming or hacking or whatever. This has turned into an industry of its own. And now, unfortunately, it's quite accessible to get your hands on a little software application that you can launch a denial of service attack with, or even a ransomware on dark web if you are willing to exchange some cryptocurrency for that. So you can find suddenly yourself as a part of this industry trying to make quick money out of this.
In another quote I heard from you, which I found very interesting in the ASM podcast, I also will put this link in the show notes, is amateurs hack systems, professional hack people. So we, the human beings in our companies, we are the biggest risk. And as you are also doing research into the behavior and the attitudes of young people towards data protection and their readiness to exchange privacy for convenience or financial gains, what are the major findings in this research concerning the behavior of the coming generations? And I would be very interested to know, are there any significant difference to former generations?
Two things. That was not my expression. I was quoting someone else, but it's indeed a brilliant quote to say professionals hack people and amateurs hack systems. Because when you look into the threat landscape, going after exploitation of vulnerabilities is much less of a percentage compared to social engineering attacks. So really going after the human element. Not even finding a leaked password is sometimes all you need to breach into an organization. Regarding your other question, research shows many different research findings that actually are inconsistent. So some research finds no difference at all. There are other research finds huge differences. But what we know for sure is the way, let's say, our generation defines privacy is very different compared to our kids' generation. So some people say, oh, young people, they don't value privacy. It's actually not correct. It's just they don't value the way we do. Their notion of privacy is different than ours. They are much more utilitarian. They say, oh, you know, I will just look into what I get in return. I don't mind sharing this, that, but they still do value their privacy. That's what we know.
But of course, a digital native has another opinion about data privacy than elderly people, that's
absolutely. And they are much more comfortable with technology as well, which adds to that difference, I would say.
Jochen, I suppose CANCOM is prepared for any developments in this section. What can a company do to be always up to date, especially in these rapidly evolving issues, AI, cybersecurity, as we had before?
I mean, AI is a separate topic. It's really a game changer from many aspects, especially in the cybersecurity field. But what can a company do and what we are doing? I think there's no 100% protection. You can invest tons of money. And of course, we are working also together with all the technology companies and we're trying to increase the protection level, but there's no 100%. So this means behind the first line of protection, there has to be a line also of detection. You know, to be very fast in detecting attacks and to be able to respond quickly. And this is what we're seeing, that more and more customers and companies are building up the detection line. But that's not that easy. Sounds easy, because we all have a shortage of skilled security experts. In Europe, we're missing about 500,000 security experts already. And we mentioned it already, we are competing against a professional industry, a global industry also. As a consequence, to protect the systems, you need to join the forces. I always say cybersecurity is a team sport. You cannot win alone, because you have to protect yourself against really global professional attackers. Meaning, we see a lot of collaboration on the market. We are also offering 724 Cyber Defense Center, detecting security events, analyzing them by using AI, having also then the right analysts and experts who are able to defend or even do incident response afterwards. And if you look a little bit closer, then you see, we call it a kill chain phase. So when an attack is coming, in which phase do you see him already? And you can see him very early if you also use threat intelligence by analyzing the darknet. For instance, you see darknet indicators for upcoming attacks. For instance, if you look at credential brokers, they are dealing with your credentials. We always said the user is always a weak point. And so if
they attack humans, as we said.
They attack humans. And if they are already selling brand credentials, you know that they're preparing an attack on the company. So that's one module, for instance, where you can see in a very early phase. It's called weaponization phase. In the kill chain, in the weaponization phase, you can detect it in a threat intelligence. But then you can also install, for instance, endpoint detection on different kind of endpoints. Can be a laptop, can also be in the production area, a machine. And there you can see then in the exploitation and installation phase, that's the terminology that you use in the kill chain, there's a later phase, but then you can see it at least in this phase that you're getting attacked. But it's part of the detection. So to summarize it, there's no 100% protection, and you need to build up a detection line. And this is a team sport.
I love that expression. It's a team sport indeed. That's why we also talk about the, let's say, switching mindset from a very traditional classical cybersecurity to resilience, right? So I completely agree with what you just said, that there is no 100% secure system, which implies that we cannot just try and build protection for the company, right? Like the comparison is building a high wall around your organization,
a fence,
so nobody can get in unless they have the authorization. Because we do see that indeed you can invest and you keep building layer after layer after layer. But indeed, if one employee credential has leaked, then all of those layers will lose their purpose, right?
And not only the employees, also suppliers, for example.
Oh, yes, exactly. Third-party risk is a major driver of the breaches that we see these days. And resilience implies that you, yes, of course, you invest, you protect, you defend, but you also try and be as quick in detection and as efficient in incident response and as effective in recovery. So we do not only focus on protection, but also we do focus on, if I experience this, how quickly can I get back on my feet with minimal damage and minimal risk?
You said in another podcast, it's like Jochen said, team play, because you have to work with your employees, with your suppliers, and it doesn't end in your building. So security or cybersecurity doesn't end.
Yes, we do talk about ecosystems these days, right? We talk about platform business models, ecosystem business models. The underlying requirement of building an ecosystem is creating connections between organizations. So by default, we are increasing the attack surface, as Joachim was saying in the very beginning, right? So that implies I cannot just worry about my own security. And if I'm happy with my investments and I rest, you know, and say, okay, I'm done, I'm secure. But because the weakness of your partners can also imply weakness on your organization. So of course, you cannot go ahead and take the responsibility of another organization's cybersecurity. But as a key decision maker, you can influence, right? If you make this topic as a part of your business deal, as a part of your business discussions, by asking the right questions, you already give the message that this is an important part of the business for you. And you would expect that from your vendors, from your suppliers. I think by this way, we can kind of enhance the look or the perception around this topic among executives, especially.
And in the future, it could be a reason to work with a company or to work not with a company.
Exactly. Exactly. For instance, think about retail giants. I know that Walmart in US supermarket chain, they have very strict security standards. They say, don't even talk to me if you cannot prove me that you have this, this and that. So of course, not every company may have such amount of power to enforce standards, but that's a great way to start thinking.
Perhaps a comment on this. I completely agree. We have to ask the right question to the supply chain. But I would go one step even further in the future. And the hypothesis is, for me, in the future, will not be enough to ask the right question and to give to show the audits. And we have the ESA audits and TSEX and so on. I think it will be in the future a real-time monitoring, even through the supply chain. There will be a risk score. And you will have a real-time risk score, seeing if your suppliers are more or less, if an attack is planned, just think about threat intelligence, where you see indicators already in the darknet, and you see that you have a weak supplier, then you have to negotiate with him. And this would be part, from my perspective, of a business contract in the future, to have a resilient and trustful supplier. You're right, yeah.
That threat intelligence, currently I'm working on a research paper where we talk about cybersecurity's worst best practices. So we talk about threat intelligence, how either organizations don't even look for that. Does my name work around the billboards on dark web, right? So that, or they have threat intelligence, but only at the technical level, or they have threat intelligence, but that information does not reach the right people in the organization. So not really used properly, even though it enters the organization. So just to complement what you were saying, that's such a critical component that it seems most organizations don't take advantage of yet.
Right. But just think about the automotive industry, where you have in the supply chain, just in sequence production.
Yeah,
and if you see that one of your major suppliers has a high risk indicator, you have to take measures. And it's also in your own interest, because this would lead potentially to a business interruption of your own company.
Yeah.
So I think supply chain management, supply chain real-time monitoring will be the next big thing.
So we have to use the networks not just to collaborate to produce something or to sell something, also for security reasons. Now we come to the worst case, because when we talk about cybercrime and professionals, hacking people or hacking companies, we also come to the ransomware dilemma. Can you please describe this dilemma? Okay.
I think the dilemma is there because even though it is very easy to say, do not bargain or negotiate with the hackers, don't even pay, it is not as easy to do because of all the things that we've already been discussing, there are still many organizations that get caught unprepared. So dilemma is there. You know that there's an ethical dimension to this. You should not be paying. You should not be feeding into the business model of these criminals. Yet it seems that is the cheapest and fastest option to recovery. We know this in hindsight, of course, in most organizations. If you're seeing that ransom note on your screen, the criminal actors are already in your network for quite some time, at least long enough to know your financial statements, whether you have backups or not, this or that. So the amount they demand from you is often cheaper than the actual cost of recovery, especially if they manage to also infect your backups, right? They are really putting you in a corner. So this is why we called the article we published the dilemma, because the reality is not as black or white as to say, no, you don't pay and you just fall back on your preparation.
Jochen, which role does CANCOM play when it comes to such a cyber attack in companies, which leads to a ransomware dilemma?
Ideally, we have a detection mode and we can prevent that it comes to a dilemma. That would be the ideal case. As already mentioned, normally the hackers do not activate the ransomware immediately. Normally, there are a few days in your system and they try to also infect the backup to have a better negotiation position. But of course, in some cases, then we very often the partner and doing an incident response activity, helping the customers to start forensic activities, very often build up the infrastructure from the scratch. And it's, of course, up to the customer to solve this dilemma. This is nothing that we can decide. It's a management decision. But at least we help the customer from a technical perspective and also from the forensic perspective. And that was nevertheless very important is, and we mentioned it in the sense of team sport, it's a very close cooperation, the collaboration between the companies. In the detection phase, of course, we need also a counterpart from the customer side. We need to be part of the processes. We need a contact person. And also in the incident case, it's a very close cooperation where the processes have to be integrated. And just also to give an impression about figures, how to avoid such a situation. Last year, we detected 1.2 billion security events. And we monitor them and we analyze them. And then we, of course, use AI to sort them out. And at the end, more than 2,000 incidents were avoided with our systems. And of course, you need a counterpart to discuss such an event as soon as possible, because every minute counts in such a situation. And we are also sharing this information with other security operation centers and CERTs. Yeah? So we are part of a community with 600 other security operation centers worldwide to share our experience, to share attack vectors and things like this. And again, it's something where we are all in the same boat to avoid such a situation, make the best out of it.
I find that very encouraging to hear that actually, because until recently, most organizations tended to, if they experience an incident, they kind of close internally, they close the doors to the outside world. They say, we deal this internally, we keep it under the rug, we don't talk about it. But then we lose an opportunity there, right? To learn from organizations' mistakes. But so I hear more and more of this, let's say, non-competitive intelligence sharing initiatives. Mm-hmm. There is also a new initiative in Switzerland. There's another one in Belgium. Either government moderated or really sprung from collaboration among, let's say, banking and telco companies to really pick up the phone very informally, say, look, this is what we're seeing, just so that we wanted to let you know, or something along those lines. But really learning from each other's experiences, but also sharing threat intelligence. Otherwise, nobody can fight this alone in their own little, let's say, bubble. We have to do that more often, I think.
I guess sometimes it's a little bit of shame when you have to admit we are attacked, but there's no reason for that.
No, absolutely. We are way past that phase, right?
I hope so.
Everybody is. Whoever I come across and ask, they say, oh, we're constantly under attack. So there's nothing weird about that. I think the real reputational damage has already shifted or is shifting to not handling it well. So coming back to that resilience discussion we had, I think it's really much more damaging if you're suddenly caught unprepared and people will say in this day and age, you don't even know how to recover from your backups, or you don't have an incident response plan, or you don't have a communication plan about this. I think that's way more damaging to say, yes, they breached through a vulnerability. We have yet to patch, or an employee clicked on a phishing link, because we are all human. We still fall for these things. But I think it's way more damaging to still not have a plan in place to deal with these incidents.
Or a partner who can help you.
Or a partner who can help you.
What Jochen said is very important, I guess. So to have an advisor when you hopefully you don't have experience with such an incident, it can be very helpful, I guess.
I think it's very fair to say, Jochen also mentioned the cybersecurity talent gap, which is a global issue that everyone is dealing with. Even starting from there, it's not difficult to extrapolate and say not every organization has all kinds of cyber talent in-house. So you do often need a trusted advisor, especially in case of incidents. Take forensics. How are you going to know how you were breached? What was it that they took advantage of, and et cetera? You do need this level of expertise to come and do the analysis for you. And most organizations don't have that in place, right? So there's always this external partnership that is almost always necessary to fall back on in these incidents.
I guess that's a very good point for the end of today's episode. Öki, Jochen, thank you very much for joining us today here in Alpbach. And thank you very much sharing these very interesting insights with us. This was today's episode of Coffee Tea Technology, the podcast of the K-Business.com. If you like this episode, please recommend us and give us feedback on our podcast platforms. Thanks for listening. Until next time.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.